guys, and welcome to another episode of Tuesday Morning Coffee. As always, I am your host, Tyler Babin, and welcome to a very special episode of the podcast. Today, I'm sitting down with Julia Tien, who is not only the manager of the Creative Residency, but she's my boss. Julia is sort of my direct contact with Adobe throughout my Creative Residency program, and I'm so excited to bring her onto the podcast and give you guys sort of the ins and outs of the Creative Residency and a bunch of tips to the actual application process, because as of now, the applications for next year's residency cohort are now open. So you can go on to the residency website as we speak. The link will be in the show notes of this episode, and you'll be able to submit your application to become a resident for next year, which is what I'm going through as we speak. Last week, Julia and I were at Adobe Max in Los Angeles, along with all of the other creative residents, and I really wanted to bring her on and talk about both what sort of set my application apart, along with the other eight incredible residents this year, to give you guys a little bit of insight into what is expected, what you should do if you are really interested in taking part of next year's creative residency. I'm obviously a big fan of the program. It's allowed me to do a lot of creative projects, and I think this podcast in particular gives a lot of really fine detail that maybe isn't available in other places to let you guys know what you should do when applying to the residency. I hope you guys like this episode. I hope you take a lot from it, and it informs your decisions on applying to the residency. Again, if you guys have any other questions or anything, feel free to email me or DM me on Instagram. I'll do my best to give input on applications and project proposals and all of those good things. But for now, this is Tuesday Morning Coffee with Julia Tien.
I want like a drum roll.
Julia.
Yes, Tyler.
This is a big deal episode.
Thank you.
I'm pumped for it.
Is that because I'm a big deal and that's a big...
Well, I think it's funny that like you're a big deal, we're talking about a big deal subject, and also you're my boss. So it's just like there's a lot of good energies going on in this episode.
Perfect.
Julia, welcome to Tuesday Morning Coffee.
Thank you for having me.
Please let the people know who you are, what you do, and how you and I are involved in our work relationship.
Absolutely. So my name is Julia Tien. I am the manager of the Creative Residency. It's a worldwide program. We have two regional leads that I work with, Francisca Parsho and Ryota Kamanishi, and they're my counterparts. And we run this really cool program that is a career kickstarter, career accelerator for artists that are in the first 5 years of their career. And the way that you and I know each other is that we were on our annual quest to find the very most talented, and you were really brave and submitted a application. And so we really loved your video, and then we loved your project proposal, and then we loved how you took feedback from us, and then we loved you all the way into like hiring you. So
that's so funny. I rewatched the video again, and we had talked about this, but
yes.
I'm embarrassed that that's going to be public in the world.
Yeah, I was just amazed at how like you were just very stepped back, and I could hear the nervousness in your voice.
Yeah.
But at the time, I couldn't hear it. Now that I know you so much better,
yeah.
Like. Growth.
Yeah, it's real. So I think there's a lot of, obviously, we're going to dive into everything's creative residency. I'm sure everyone that knows or is listening to this podcast probably knows that I've talked a lot about the creative residency. Talk to me a little bit about your background, because I'm interested in who you are. You're also an incredible artist. Talk about how you got into Adobe, what your life in Adobe's kind of been like, and how you sort of stepped into taking over the creative residency program a couple of years ago.
It's a takeover.
Yeah.
So my background is in illustration. I had a very circuitous experience during my undergraduate. I tried a bunch of different things, but I really found that when I was stressed out and tired, I would go do art, which is something I actually found as a sophomore in college. So I was really, really late to art. And the more I did it, the more I found that I loved it. And I happened to run into someone at school who ran the illustration program for our school, and he and I became really good friends, and he just really encouraged me. So I started doing illustration. It was, I think, my second or third major that I had swapped to, and just absolutely loved it. So I did that, graduated with a BFA, and then worked doing illustration, but mostly like brand design.
Okay.
Out of college. and then had kids and tried to work, balance all of it, and found that I wanted to go back and get a graduate degree. So after traveling the world a bunch, I decided that I would go get my MBA. I wanted to do a BFA or an MFA, but I found that the business side was really exciting to me, and I just wanted to indulge that. Mm-hmm. So I went and got my MBA, and paired that business acumen with art, and recruited with Adobe and got the job, which was super cool. And I started working with a brand team because that had been my experience as an illustrator, was doing brand design. And then from there, I did some product design. And then while I was doing product, I became friends with Heidi Voltmer, who's my now boss. And when the lady who's running the creative residency quit, she was looking for someone. And since I was already involved with being friendly with the team and going to a few events, they interviewed me, and I found myself leading the program. So.
And what's it like now? Like, you're obviously creative, but now being able to like help sort of cultivate other creatives, is this sort of like, do you feel like you've like found your flow? This is like the thing.
Absolutely. Like, yeah, helping others has always been a big part of my job. I get a lot out of mentorship, and being able to help people in a way that I always wanted help is like very, very special, of being able to give people the opportunity to learn the business side of art to help themselves. I always thought it was an absolute crime that people accept the starving artist thing. I think you and I talked about, that being a starving artist is a lot more sexy until you experience it. And so I was seeing that over and over, and I kept asking, like, why? Why am I seeing all of, like, the cream of the crop of my class that I graduated with? You know, a lot of them aren't even in art, and they're so incredibly talented, but they're, like, went to dental school, or they're doing graphic design or something that, you know, is not illustration. And it was that starving artist thing of just they weren't being paid enough, and they had to support a family, or there was a really negative narrative about, you know, you just don't expect to be paid. And so one of the most rewarding things about the work that I do now is I'm really trying to combat that you can't be paid. Like, that is not true. And let me teach you how.
I love it. I don't want to like go off on too many random tangents, but I do think it's interesting. And it's the question I get probably so much is like, should I go to film school? Should I go to art school? And I didn't finish college. You did. And so I'm curious on your thoughts on formal creative education. Do you think that it's, you can really kind of like make or break it in college, or is it sort of like going to school is a good way to refine the craft, but you either have it or you don't? Because I guess my problem is I always felt that I was looking at where video was going, and I was like, there's just no way curriculum can keep up with, like, no college is talking about TikTok. You know what I mean? Like, a lot's going on right there, you know? And so that was always kind of my battle with it. But I'm curious, being in a in kind of a different medium, what your take on doing
formal education
education in the space.
I would say, like, in my experience, it was necessary, but it was because I was coming to art so late, and I didn't have anyone else really in my family. I came from a music family, and my dad's in business, but no one really knew how to guide me through the visual arts. And I think since I came to it so late, I didn't really have the confidence right off the bat to be like, I can just forge all of this myself. So it was really helpful to have a mentor in college who got me through it. I think really that was the highest value that I got out of school, but I think you can get that out of outside of school. And so I really don't think that you have to have a degree in design in order to kill it. I mean, we've had so many residents that don't have degrees in art. I'm a big proponent for having a degree, period, because I think in this day and age, you know, if there was something else that you wanted to go do, getting hired without a degree is harder now.
For sure.
But yeah, I'll leave it at that.
Instagram clout will only get you so far. So let's talk about the residency itself. And before we dig into applications and all that, why does this program even exist?
So I love answering this question. It gets me really excited. So I guess Heidi Voltmer really came up with the idea. She is my boss right now. She helps with the program quite a bit. And they really were sitting down and trying to figure out, like, where is there a gap in what Adobe offers. And I actually just talked to someone in our booth right now. We're at Max. Someone came up and was talking to us in the booth, and he said, this is really neat because so many artists are, you know, trying to scrounge by, and Adobe software isn't the cheapest. Yeah. And so it's really nice to hear that Adobe has a program that gives back to the community and that they care about and support artists who are struggling to make it. I have so many examples that I'm really excited to share about the residents. But in answer to your question, it really came from, you know, how can we serve the artist community in ways that they need, and really like that career guidance between school or just getting started and then being super professional. There's a gap there. It's either you're a beginner or you've made it, or, you know, maybe you have a degree and then all of a sudden you drop out of like the very hand-holdy experience of college. And then there's this, oh my gosh, I have to make money period, where you're panicking and trying to figure out your way. And it's during that period that we want to help people not waste time or waste energy and just say, okay, here's the steps. Here's, you know, let's model this as many ways as possible through the residency so other people can learn.
Amazing. Yeah, I think that's probably what was so attractive to me about the program in itself, is just getting that. And, you know, the interview I just did, they were like, what about this, like, stood out as what you knew you wanted to do? And I was like, I've just never had the opportunity to, like, sit down and think for a second about, like, what I even want to do before I, like, start diving into it. You know, so I think that's a really good explanation. It's funny because I don't know if I ever told you this story. I called my dad whenever we were, like, halfway through the interview process. And I was like, hey, like, just so you know, like, I might be leaving my job. And he's like, what are you talking about? And I was like, well, I'm interviewing for this other thing. I don't know if it's going to happen, but, like, it's kind of leaning towards that direction. And then he's like, so what is it? And then, like, I tried to explain, like, the residency in a whole. And he's like, so a company's just going to pay you for a year to, like, make the videos you want to make. And I was like, yeah. And he's like, this might be a pyramid scheme. You know what I mean? He was like, immediately, yes, you know, he's like, this seems strange. We need more info.
Yeah. We get asked all the time, like, what's the catch? What's the catch?
Well, that was my next thing. It's like, what does Adobe get out of this very expensive program and funding other artists? Where does Adobe's value come from? Like, what do you recognize as a successful year of the residency?
Yeah, absolutely. So there are a handful of things. A lot of people come to me and say, oh, this is such like a great charity or such like an amazing gift to the community. It absolutely is an amazing service to the community, but it's not without a strategy behind it. And so one of those things is that we want artists to actually understand the practice of art. And I think there's a lot of people out there that buy Photoshop with the hope and the dream that they'll become photographers, but also with the misnomer that if they buy Photoshop or whatever app, then they'll open it and suddenly within a week they'll become a photographer. And as you know, art is similar to music or dance in that it takes a lifetime of, you know, or maybe not an entire lifetime, but a good portion of your
lifetime
to become really good at it. And so that practice piece is something that I think isn't immediately apparent to some people who don't have the understanding. And so really wanting to help people succeed as much as possible with our tools by understanding that there's all this other know-how that you have to have about art and about the principles of good design and things like that in order to succeed in the product. So there's that. The other one is that we really are focused in our program about how you sustain a living and how do you make pieces in your portfolio or in your YouTube channel or whatever that will be attractive to a client so you can earn on the other side of this experience. We don't want you just to like coast for this year and then have a panic attack at the end. So we really try to have that conversation a lot. And that conversation, we want to be transparent to our community, because if our community rejects the notion that you have to starve in order to be an artist and that it's just part of paying your dues, then we really start making progress and people will feel less like, oh my gosh, Adobe's products are so expensive, I can't afford it, and more like, yeah, this is one of the tools that I use. No big deal, because I earn enough money.
Right.
So that's really what we're trying to accomplish.
I love that. Yeah. That's great. I do want to like dial back into one, because you said practice and you talked about practice in creative arts. And I, in my last video, went on like a big rant about, I don't think practice is thought about enough in creativity, which is super strange to me because it seems like it should be like top of the list. But I sort of equated to like, I don't go buy a basketball today and then expect to play in the NBA tomorrow. And for some reason, there's like this thought process, I feel like, now that it's like, if you just go buy the tool, you buy Photoshop and set up an Instagram, you're a photographer and you're off to the races. But there's so much like trials and tribulations that go through that process.
Yeah.
And I love the not, you know, helping address the starving artist issue, but also not shying away from the fact that like you still have to put in a lot of work, you know, you can't buy your way through this.
Yeah, exactly. And that is something that we try not to shield the residents too much, is that like in school you have this wonderful bubble around you of, you know, other students that are like-minded, and you know, elect for your classes, and then it's just you pretty much just go every day and it's an automated schedule. You have professors who care about your progress, hopefully. But that's not what this program is. Like, you have mentors who care about you. You have people within the residency that care about you at Adobe. But in the day-to-day, you really are, you have to figure out your own schedule. You have to figure out your own, like, okay, what do I want to do? What is my brand? How am I going to make money? And so I like to think it's like a nice transition from either being in a company or being in school or whatever, into really being confident in your own skin and in your own, you know, agency or freelance gig or whatever.
Yeah. So let's expand that a little bit. And someone who is interested in applying to the residency next year, in your mind, what does sort of that year of life look like? And then I'll talk about my experience too. Okay. We'll do the balance. But if you're pitching to, you know, explain what this year actually looks like to someone, what should someone expect coming into it?
Yeah, I'm so glad that I get an opportunity to do that. So the residency is a variety of things. It's like an amalgamation of things. One layer is that it is an opportunity for you to really get guidance from the people that you really need it from. But that takes so much introspection about, okay, what am I trying to accomplish? What am I, what are my weaknesses? What are the skills I have yet to learn in order to make the kind of work I want to be working on? So usually I will work with each of the residents to make sure that we have that nailed down at the beginning of the residency, and then have checkpoints throughout the year. And then we can align you with, you know, a network of people that could potentially be mentors. And then it's up to you as a resident to do the legwork of networking and seeing who the right mentor is, and, you know, who you have chemistry with, and who has the right skill set. So that's one layer of it, is the mentorship part. And then another part of it is really, I think, having to find your own artistic confidence. So there are opportunities to speak, to present, to do workshops, to do recruiting for the program, to be a brand advocate, to have your work pushed out by Adobe social channels, to be on the Creative Cloud channel, stand up at conferences. So all of that takes a lot of confidence, and we kind of ease you into it. But then as you try those things out, really deciding, like, what are these pieces of things that I've done actually need to be or should be part of my career afterward? And so some people come back and say, live streaming was so cool. Also, I never want to do that again because it's not my jam. And then we have other people that are like, live streaming is my baby. Can I please continue to do this after the residency? And so I think that is a really cool experience for me to see, and then also for the residents to experience, is like, what of all of this like public facing stuff is something that you want to pull out and actually integrate into your career. So there's that. I think there's that aspect to the residency. In terms of day to day, like, I mean, you can kind of fill that in. Am I missing anything?
I don't think so. I think that's a good way. And then, we can chat about, I guess, my personal experience and the experience of the other residents. So I've definitely gone through, like, a number of different ups and downs. I remember, you know, like, the first week of the residency, we were spending a lot of time with last year's residents. And I feel like maybe it was Aaron who was like, like, Julie was basically just my therapist for this year. And I kind of laughed. And then the other day, like, we had got off a meeting and I was like, Julie is just basically my therapist at this point. Like, we really just, like, dig into the problems of my life. It's funny. So the, I guess if I'm going to speak on the day-to-day of what the residency is, no days, like, ever really the same. A lot of my time is spent just at the computer, like, working away. There's a good amount of travel and kind of bouncing around and things like that. But it's funny, in the early days, I was going a little crazy. There were like, I was putting out a lot of stuff and it was all, like, it was good, but it was very abstract. There was like no focus on what I was doing. And I kind of realized that. And so I feel like I sort of took my foot off the pedal a little bit.
Yeah.
And yep. started to kind of narrow in on like understanding why I was trying to make certain things. Yeah. And you said something actually to me during one of our calls, and you were like, I just don't want you making content for the sake of content. And I was like, oh, I think I'm doing that a little bit. Mm-hmm. And so even though, like, at the end of the day, I'm a content creator, like, I have to be making it, mm-hmm. I wanted to make sure that there were, like, specific pillars that mattered to me that I was building off of. Yeah. So it wasn't just, like, I'm going to make this video. It's like, I'm going to go make this video, and even though it might be random, it's okay because it aligns with these things that I've, like, understood about the direction I want my brand to be going.
I love that. That is one of my very favorite parts, and also one of the most stressful parts yeah. of the residency is right at the beginning. I sit with like every single resident and say like, what are your brand values? Like, yeah. let's talk about what actually matters to you mm-hmm. as an artist and influencer. What's the message you want to get out there? What do you stand for? What kind of content are you excited about making? Yeah. You know, don't make content just because you're good at it. Mm-hmm. And I think we had a really good talk about that, and I was so excited when you showed like, here are my pillars. Would you mind like saying what those three are?
No, we can definitely talk about it. I think, what was it, it's aspirational, transparent, and the last one's escaping me for some reason.
Relatable, I think.
Yeah. Like, I want to, and this is because like, I think a lot of, I was doing like an audit of my Instagram, and recently I'm falling into like, I really hate the word luxury, but there's like this element of like a luxury travel like mm-hmm. thing. I've been doing yeah. a lot of that stuff, but I also want to be extremely transparent with how I'm doing that, how my relationships with these brands are working. Right. Like, I'm not really making a lot from it. Like, a lot of it's mm-hmm. just like me experimenting in content. And mm-hmm. so it's like, even though there's like this aspirational element of like a higher level of living, like yeah. a successful artist thing, I want to be very clear with how I'm doing it mm-hmm. and the benefits and the highs and lows and everything that sort of mm-hmm. comes along with those.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love that. I think that sometimes people see things that you do with like luxury brands or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I think it's easy to think like, oh, well, you're with Adobe now and they're just handing you all these opportunities. Yeah. And the truth is that I don't even know about a lot of these opportunities until I see them on your channel.
Yeah.
And so you're working very directly with a variety mm-hmm. of people. I know that you've gotten a lot of opportunities through Adobe, but because of your, because of the good work you're putting out, that's like consistent
yeah.
and it's, people have a good idea of like, what to expect from you. I think that's why some of these brands are approaching you of like, oh, you align with yeah. what we're trying to accomplish. You would be a good influencer for us. Let's approach you for yeah. this opportunity.
Yeah, it's funny you say that I get asked a lot, I think, people are always like, how do you make like relationships with brands? And I don't have an answer for you because mm-hmm. I don't think I've ever reached out to a brand. Right. Like, I've let them come to me. And so I think at its core, it's just do work that you like and be consistent.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, it's going to be weird how lucky you're going to start getting with those emails that come in.
It's true. And you'll find, too, that for the most part, the brands that approach you, again, are ones that align with your values, which is really lovely because then you can make just organic and genuine content. But that's something that I sat down with Tammy Coker last mm-hmm. year, and we really talked about building his brand. And I said, you know, what is one of your brand values? And he said, like, positivity. He's like, I don't want to take on a project where I don't see that it has some kind of positive impact on people. If it's too dark or too yeah. negative, it's not something that mm-hmm. I would feel I could do a good job for my client on. And I really love that because I think if he sticks to that, he'll continue to get clients that stand for the same thing.
Yeah.
So I think, yeah.
All right. So enough about me. Okay. Let's talk about all these other amazing residents we have this year.
Awesome.
Feel free. You can do your like mom thing where you just like explain everyone. We can get on the list because I think there's so many people that are doing awesome things mm-hmm. and people that are just so much smarter than me. As I was thinking about the other day, I was just like, Julie's like solving world hunger and stuff. And I'm just like taking pictures of a car. like, this is ridiculous.
So you want me just to give a rundown
Please.
Of everybody?
Well, I want to hear about everyone and then also kind of what their experience has been like and
yeah.
some of the, I guess, tips of how they've treated the residency well and maybe sure. like, you know, just if someone who is listening to this is looking to apply and what to expect, mm-hmm. I want to hear about everything. Also, okay. I don't get to talk to them nearly enough, so I'm excited to hear too.
Okay, so now here's where I'm going to do the thing where I answer the question that you kind of asked, but the question that
yeah,
I wanted to answer. So I would love to talk about like each of the residents and how they came to us and why their applications were appealing to us. Mm-hmm. We get that question a lot of the time. And of course, I love bragging about the residents. So I'll just run down the list. So I'll start with Sin. So one of the reasons why we really loved Sin's application was that it was very visual, mm-hmm. which is so nice. I think that it's always perplexes me when people submit an application that doesn't have visual elements to mm-hmm. it, and then they're trying to use words to describe their style or words to describe what they love to do. Mm-hmm. And I'm just like, show, don't tell, you're an artist. So that was really nice to see on hers. And then she also talked a lot about the community. Mm-hmm. And she has a really deep love for teaching the community and helping other people understand how to design and how to break into the industry. So I really love that kind of like approach to helping others as she grows. So that's Sin. She's a street photographer based in Miami.
And not just to like quickly dive in, I think in the thought of like application tips, both visual, but also like leaving a little bit to the imagination, mm-hmm. I think. Everyone has been like asking me, I've always said like give as many details as you can. So it always like very understanding on what you're doing. Mm-hmm. But just because I've like spoken with Sin on her application specifically, like visual, but like I don't want to give you the whole story yet. Mm-hmm. Like keep some things close to the chest.
Yeah. I mean, and that's where a lot of it gets fleshed out during the interviews. Yeah. But really your application should be the closest thing to a pitch you can do. Just to get like people interested, to get the basic, like a very clear idea of like where you're headed with it. And then all the details fill in, you know, during your interview and then during the first, you know, few months of your residency. So I like that. Thank you. Yeah. Julie Sandusky is based in Seattle, and she's a UX designer, XD UX designer, which I should actually clarify. So experience designer. And she pitched a concept about circular economy. It's actually the first time I even heard about circular economy. I'll explain it because it's not very self-explanatory. So essentially, and this is... I hope she doesn't strangle me for like not doing this correctly. As far as I understand it, circular economy is where you try to make whatever you create can be recycled back into something else, and there's no waste that comes out of the system. And so for food waste, you know, where there's no part of it that goes into a landfill, or even, you know, is composted, but like the entire thing is used or consumed. And for clothing, you know, where there's no piece of it that's discarded or broken down to like a very elemental level, but that it's still used like as clothing if possible. And then if it has to be, you know, it's used for like furniture stuffing. And anyway, so she mentioned that she would love to address the problem of world hunger, which is massive.
Yeah.
But she did it in a way that was really relatable. She's very good at explaining big concepts in bite-sized pieces. And I think that is a very needed skill in our time nowadays, because we do have a lot of like existential things that millennials are extremely concerned about, and Gen Z, I guess. We're worried about the demise of our planet.
Yep.
So I think having that skill of being able to break down a huge problem into smaller pieces was really appealing to us about her work. And the other thing we love about her is that she came from a completely different discipline. Mm-hmm. She has really cool understanding about, I think, coding and a variety of other things that she studied. And so she's very well-rounded outside of design. Mm-hmm. And then she brought all of that know-how to design when she became a resident. She had a nice portfolio, but she really was at an inflection point where she had to decide between business or art. And of course, residency loves that story. Yeah. So that's Julie.
My like two cents on Julie. I think you'll like the story. So Julie and Patricia were both in New York for an event, and they came over to my apartment for dinner. And we were going to go like eat at the rooftop. They brought food. I was like, oh, like, let me get you guys drinks. And Julie said she wanted water. And I just like instinctively like, handed her a bottle of water, like a plastic bottle. And she looked at me. She was like, do you know nothing? So now I've worked plastic bottles out of the system at home. So it's just like Brita pitcher for life.
I love it. I know. I bought
it.
That's the
biggest thing I can take.
Brita pitcher for life. I brought a Swell bottle with me to the conference because I was a little worried about feeling the water bottle shame. So and then we have Juan Jose. He's super cool. He's very experimental with his work. We hired him with the idea that he would do something called Impossible Stories, which is like highly imaginative, photo manipulated pieces of work. And he's really branched out into using other mediums as well, so such as 3D and movement, video, motion graphics. So his work is really a compilation of a variety of different fields. So that's really valuable to us as a company, especially because we can talk about, you know, how our products work with each other, or how you don't have to just be one thing. Mm-hmm. You can have like creativity that goes across various fields, and you don't have to be put into a bucket. So I feel like he's a really good emblem of that. So that's why he appealed to us, and he's just a very sweet person. Yeah. And then lastly, there's Tyler. And we really, really loved that you had this incredible job with Gary, but that you wanted to be your own person. Yeah. I mean, that shows a lot of drive, that you, despite, you know, all of that recognition and a variety of people being like, what, why would you ever leave anything? Yeah. For you to have the guts to really strike out on your own. And however that, you know, pans out with employment or with, you know, being your own studio or whatever. I just think it's super courageous and really yeah. cool. Anyway, so that's why you appealed to us.
Amazing. So that's all of the U.S.
That's the U.S.
Now let's jump across the pond.
I'll go through the internationals a little faster. So we have Patricia, who is focused on the future of design, the future of transportation, the future of home, which is really neat. Every time I see anything on Google that talks about like voice control or AI or any of the futuristic technologies, I always send it to Patricia because that's what she's examining. And then we have Amelie, who is a photographer who does like a lot of set design, and she makes her own worlds, which is really cool. She's like a sculptor and like craftsy, and yeah, exactly. So she doesn't just do photography. Mm-hmm. She has this whole other workflow. And then we have Octavia, and Octavia is an illustrator based in the UK who does illustrations to not only cope with her own mental health issues, but also to inspire others to be vulnerable and transparent about their experiences, and to seize the day in recognizing the little small things every day that bring joy. And a little note about Octavia, I remember when we went to her interviews, so I go to each country and do the interviews, I was so blown away by her level of like gratitude. She just was like so genuine. Mm-hmm. And when I talked to her, she just was like, it is a dream come true to be sitting here interviewing. Not like, oh, it would be a dream come true if I were selected. It was like, just, I'm so happy to be here. Thank you for just, I'm happy to be here. And it wasn't, you know, like a low confidence thing. It was just like pure gratitude.
Yeah.
And I was like, I want to work with you. So that was really nice to find someone with just such a positive attitude. And every positive thing that's happened during the residency is with that approach of like, wow, what a gift. So that's nice.
Yeah. And Octavia's like one of my favorite people ever.
I love your podcast.
She was episode 3 of the podcast. So if you're new to the podcast on this episode, go back and listen to the conversation Tink and I had. I think this is a great conversation too, but like just having two residents talk about like the program we're going through mm-hmm. gave a really, really good view of like the internal workings.
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah. And then we have Aiko, who is a illustrator in Japan, and she is doing work where she's pivoting from doing mostly like beauty and fashion illustrations, and now she's interested in doing textile fabric illustration design and doing interior decoration. So that's been really fun to work with her on Adobe Max. And another note about her and why she stood out, I went into an interview with her, and we were all kind of doing various interviews and comparing notes as a leadership team, and we all went into Aiko's and came out, and like there wasn't hardly any discussion. It was just like, yeah,
that's it.
We found her. So she's an absolute joy.
Yeah.
And then we have Takuma, who is doing immersive experiential design. It took a while for me during his interview to like really understand what he's doing because it's so complex.
I still don't think I understand fully what he's doing.
He's such a brain. And he's actually been connected with Adobe Research, and they're like researching all the like craziest stuff that I didn't even know. Yeah. It's like holograms and like sci-fi level.
And, yeah.
Yeah, if he doesn't know how to do it, he just builds it.
Yeah.
It's 100%. Amazing.
I love that, like, if you walk into a room that has a screen, he immediately, like, 5 minutes into being there, has, like, taken it apart, has hacked it, and it's doing something completely different. And I'm just like, again, I'm over here taking my picture of the car. Like, I don't know what's going on.
One of my favorite things about him is that he's just so... He doesn't really, like, pat himself on the back very much. He's just like, yeah, well, that was what I was interested in doing. Mm-hmm. And you're like, you do realize you're, like, very bright. And he's like, oh, okay. And then he's, like, back to working on something.
Yeah.
And a note there, I really love how... So he mentioned the other day, he's like, oh, yeah, by the way, I can't see certain colors. I'm colorblind. And just, like, I've never heard of that before from him. But just that he's so just... It doesn't... fetter him like it doesn't hold him back at all. He's just like, oh yeah, okay, I guess I'll work around that. I thought that's a really positive attitude.
Absolutely. So I'll put links to everyone's portfolios in the show notes, so you know people listening can, like, go do a deep dive.
Okay.
The thing I'm curious about is, across 9 people, we're all very different, we're all working on very different things. Was there a through line or something consistent that stood out to you guys as to, like, why we should be selected? I know there's so many factors that go into, like, deciding what the next cohort's going to be. But as people are putting in their applications, I'm sure everyone wants, like, what's that golden nugget? If there's one thing you could, like, leave them with to set yourself apart, what do you think that would be?
I would say, like, actually professionalism.
Yeah.
Because the Adobe residency is sort of an influencer and evangelism program for, you know, from the Adobe interested side. We really look for people who we know will work well with us, where it won't be, you know, a drag or, you know, be frustrating experience for anyone involved, but just that it will be easy to work with them. And professionalism is a big part of that. You know, being on time, being responsive, being courteous and kind and level-headed, taking feedback well, all of those things are, like, I super care about that. And the skill level, we look for people who have, like, good enough skill that they can execute on a client project beautifully. But we don't look for people who are very, very, very cooked because we would still want them to have that room to grow. But really for them to have that professionalism piece. I will never forget when I interviewed Tammy Coker. He was just so sweet and, like, not just, like, you know, saccharine or anything. He was just respectful.
Yeah.
And that remained the entire residency. And even as he became more confident and more self-assured, that never went away. And he's just an absolute joy to work with. So really looking for people who we know will be easy to work with and who will be good representatives of Adobe.
Yeah. And if someone's kind of looking through this application and, like, trying to decide if they should apply, how do they know? Like, who do you think this program works the best for?
Yeah. People who are at a place in their work where they feel like they have the skill set to do what they want to do, maybe with some additions, like, you know, if they want to learn how to do motion graphics, but they, you know, they're really good at photography or something, like, we can help them with that. But really, like, if you feel like you're pretty solid in your ability to do your work and you're not struggling constantly to get it done, but you just are at that point where you're like, I really want to do the thing that I want to do. That's really who we're looking for. So I'll give you an example. It's a little vague. So Anna Davis Gort, she's one of my favorite examples to use. She was working at, I think it was an animation studio, as a character designer, and she has really beautiful character designs. They're very delightful. And so when she had submitted her portfolio, we were like, wow, this girl is good at character design. But she was like, I don't want to do this for the rest of my life. I'm, like, putting in 10 to 12 hours at a design studio, and this isn't what I want to do with my life. I want to be a children's book illustrator. So we were like, okay, we can help you make that dream come true. So we found her a mentor who knows all the steps of, like, how to get an agent, how to have the right, you know, aesthetic in your work, how to do a book dummy, how far you need to even go with a book dummy before you move on to something else, how to approach a publisher, when do you approach a publisher, what kind of conferences do you go to network. That all of that information was really helpful to have from her mentor. So really looking for people at that point of, like, I'm doing something, I have good skills, but I just would like to be doing that thing I have my heart set on. Yeah. That's what we're looking for.
Yeah. I mean, I think I can echo that with my own experience. And I think it's important at some point I need to make a video like really explaining why I was okay with leaving my job at Vayner. Because a lot of people have no idea why I would ever step away. And yeah. we had a lot of those discussions early on, is that that was a lot of the initial like pushback in the content I was making. But I knew what I wanted to make, and I had also been in a world where I knew what was going to happen if I stayed in that world.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But there was this unknown over here with the residency, and I could go experiment and try something new. And I think a lot of people default into the negative. Everyone was like, why would you leave something that was certain when you could have lost everything?
Yeah.
My mentality was always like, I might gain everything, though. Like, right. this might be the actual life that I wanted, and mm-hmm. I can always go back. So
that's true.
I think,
yeah.
Yeah. Like yeah. I think once, especially if you've established yourself in that previous world,
yeah.
you can always go back to things. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, the world doesn't have to move completely laterally.
Yeah.
So yeah, I guess that would be kind of my weird piece of advice too, is like, if you're even thinking about it, like, it's probably the best move to make that jump.
Exactly. And we structure the application too, so that it's the whole thing is a project proposal. Mm-hmm. So even if you go through the entire application process and you don't get selected, it's not all negative. Like, you can yeah. not be selected, and you now have a project proposal mm-hmm. that has your dream written down
yeah.
and like down to the numbers and the amount of like travel that would be needed, and just start pecking away at that.
Yeah.
You know, that actually is what happened with Anna. She applied 1 year, got rejected, but then she continued to work on her project proposal. She was like, well, I've got it written down now, I might as well start. And so when she applied the second time, we're like, oh, this girl has got it together.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I encourage you to apply even just for yourself, so that you have your idea written down on paper.
Yeah, I mean, I completely agree with that. And then also it's just the process of, especially if you've never like pitched something before, there's so much learning that I think comes with that, and yeah. just learning how to like concisely put your ideas together.
Exactly.
I
would love to actually hear, now that I've kind of laid out what I think yeah. the residency is, I would love to hear like yeah. what is your experience compare, how's it compare?
So it's been way different than what I initially planned, and this is perfect because my next note was like trials and tribulations. We can talk about like the highs and lows, and overall, like, it's been such a positive experience.
Yeah.
But there's definitely, I came in with these massive ambitions that like the podcast was going to start immediately, YouTube was going to start immediately, everything was going to be on full blast right out of the gate.
Mm-hmm.
And as soon as I like got my hands dirty, and it was the first time I was working solo, I was like, whoa, there's a lot going on. Let's pull everything back. We're just going to do one thing at a time, because it's the only way I'm going to actually be able to like move the needle forward. And so it was like dialing in YouTube a little bit and then figuring that out. And that was my whole focus, was just like editing videos. The thing that was interesting to me, and I don't know if we've ever talked about this specifically, but realizing I needed to like not be at my desk, like working, mm-hmm. quote unquote, mm-hmm. right? Like, mm-hmm. I actually found there's a lot of value coming from me not being at a desk and like just going out and just shooting, just for the sake of me shooting something, mm-hmm. you know, like just to like go out and explore. Mm-hmm. It was a weird kind of unlock I had recently, that there was like one morning I got up and there was like a laundry list of things that needed to be like processed on the computer, but I was like, I'm just gonna go shoot for an hour. And it was important thing to realize, like, that's my work. Like,
yeah, you're right. That still qualifies.
Work. That's
yeah.
work for me going and like shooting for an hour. Mm-hmm. And it's especially weird, I think, being in New York, where like everyone's in the rat race and going a million miles an hour. And I'm like, nope, I'm just going to stand on that corner and wait for the right shot, you know?
Yeah.
And so it's been weird. It was like the immediate ramp up, the first couple months of the residency, I slowed everything down to like manage like mental health and mm-hmm. what I wanted to work on. And now we're kind of at a place where I think there's enough foundational stuff done that I'm prepared the next 6 months to go extremely hard and mm-hmm. extremely fast and be able to like build up a lot of things that I originally had kind of promised in the upfront of the residency.
Yeah, exactly. And that it's so interesting. Like, every year it's this pattern, regardless of mm-hmm. like where our residents are in their career or what skills they come to the residency. Like, the 6 month mark is always that period where it's like, okay. I think I survived the first 6 months, and now I actually have a vision of like, yeah. here's what's going to happen with my work. And that's really where the residents become a lot more autonomous mm-hmm. And confident. I just yeah. see so much growth and confidence after the first 6 months. And these aren't like not confident people we're hiring. These are like really yeah. confident people we're hiring, but just that like creative confidence of yeah. like, I've got this. So I'm super excited for the next 6 months to see what happens.
It's funny. That's like the confidence thing is kind of crazy.
Yeah.
I always was kind of like light-footed around my work. Like it was always the work I was doing and that was good. But now I finally feel like I'm at a place where I'm like, yes, like I'm an artist. Like I'm a video creator. This is the thing I do. Mm-hmm. This is how I do it. Like I'm in way more of a place. And I think that's probably the biggest thing I can attribute to the residency thus far.
Yeah. I love that. That's actually something that I'm so glad you talked with Tink about. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it was this podcast or another podcast that she was on. But she talked about, you know, I actually didn't even call myself an illustrator until I wrote it on the residency application.
Yeah.
She was like, I always just thought of myself as someone who likes to draw. She's like, but that was even after I was being paid for my illustrations. I just never called myself an illustrator.
Yeah.
And I think really like having to come to terms with your own identity as an artist, mm-hmm. And having all these people looking at you and being like, you're an artist, like put out.
Yeah.
It could be really scary.
So what do you think, let's say we're speaking to the however many people are selected for next year's cohort, what's kind of to be expected right out of the gate?
For the application or for the residency?
For the residency itself.
Yeah.
And if there's anything else we should touch on in application world, let's do that.
So if you're selected as a resident, I am going to touch on the interview actually for a minute.
Yeah.
So one of the things that I love for people to share is that we actually ask for revisions to your actual proposal because we want to see how you collaborate and how where do you push back? Where do you, compromise? Like what's the negotiation experience like as you work on revisions to something? Because that's something that clients will work with you constantly on. You never get your vision 100%, even if you're just working for yourself. And so that is a process we go through during the applications. And then during the first few months of the residency, we usually get together as an entire cohort, do an orientation so everybody's on the same page. Mm-hmm. We do something called media training so that you know how to be a public-facing person. Yep. You don't have to jump into it completely cold and figure it out. A lot of like meeting teams. So it's just like kind of a lot of training and Ms. Trivia getting settled. And then there's a really quiet period right after that. And I always warn people about that. And it's always like a shock to the system of like you're in this experience of, oh, my gosh, I'm a new resident and orientation. And there's all these people. And then you go home and you're like, oh, yeah, I work remotely for myself out of my own apartment, which is fun for about a week. And then you get a little weirded out by it.
A lot of cabin fever.
A lot of cabin fever. And really like having to, it's so fun when I start hearing within the first couple of months of people being like, wow, this isn't working for me. Okay, well, what would work for you? And then you have to actually do the legwork of, gosh, what would work for me? Mm-hmm. And trying to find, your people or, your space that feels comfortable for you to create in.
Yeah.
There's a lot of self-doubt, I think, that comes in those first few months of, oh my gosh, am I a sham? Did they pick the wrong person? Am I really good at faking it in an interview?
Yeah.
Like, how did I get this job? What are they expecting of me? What are my followers expecting of me?
Yeah.
And so I think there's that too of just like the anxiety. And I think especially before you get your mentor of really having to do a lot of self-introspection around like, what are the things that I need from someone else to support me? Do I need someone who's in my field? Or maybe do I just need a business mentor? Or I need someone to teach me video because I've never done it before.
Right.
So really like having to do that hard work of really looking at yourself and saying, where are the gaps and who needs to help me?
Yeah.
Right at the beginning. So,
anything else you should touch on and recommendations for people that are applying this year?
Read the instructions. Like any good user operation manual. I sometimes get quite frustrated when people submit an application and obviously didn't read through the instructions or they didn't use their imagination.
Yeah.
And you go and look at their portfolios and they're actually quite good artists, but they just tossed it off. And so the residency is we only choose 9 out of well over 1,000 people that apply. And people hear that and they get intimidated, like, oh, I shouldn't apply. But really, the number of people out of that whole pool that are really applying with all their heart is a much smaller pool.
Yeah.
And so really, like, if you want to stand out, read through the instructions and all of the advice we give you on our website.
Yeah.
We just launched a new website, so that helps. Because the past residents and the current residents are the very best people to tell you what to expect. And so, like, listening to a podcast like this is a great start.
Julia, thank you so much for coming on the podcast.
I think this was awesome.
So applications are now open
for
next year's cohort. They will be open until January 15th, I want to say.
Yep, at 11:59 p.m. Pacific time.
Yeah, which you'll probably need all of that.
All right, guys, I hope you took a massive amount from this episode. I think Julie and I were able to give a lot of ins and outs of the residency, the highs, the lows, the trials, the tribulations, and everything that goes along with this process. Again, I'm going to do my absolute best because I really believe in this program and its ability to find incredible artists and creators. If you guys want me to take a look at your application proposal, if you want to jam on ideas for what you're going to propose to work on for the year, feel free, email me, DM me, be super consistent because I'm very distracted these days. There's a lot going on. If I don't respond right away, feel free to ping me again. Let me know what you guys are going to work on, what you're going to experiment with throughout your year if you're selected as a resident. And I wish you the absolute most luck possible. This program has changed my life, and I'm sure that it will change yours as well. I hope you guys have a great day and a great rest of the week. I will see you next week on Tuesday Morning Coffee. Catch you later.